Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. From our point of view, the laws that is written is a disaster. We have got that story, plus Japan protests the pandemic treaty, but first, springtime for Hitler and Zionists. Act 1, the strike. Iran's retaliatory strikes have begun. Grabbing this from TWZ.com, James, I had to do a double take. I was like, did he send me TMZ? Are they doing war coverage? TWZ, the war zone, TWZ.com. Iranian authorities have announced that they've launched a large number of missiles and drones from their territory at targets in Israel. Israeli officials subsequently confirmed that claim. The attack is in retaliation for an Israeli strike on a consular building right next to the Iranian embassy in Syria's capital, Damascus, on April Fool's Day. The entire region has been on edge since then, and you can read more about it in the war zone's probably. The IRGC, the Iran Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps' aerospace division, launched tens of missiles and drones against certain targets inside Israel, a statement said, read by Iran's state-run TV, Press TV. IRGC has dubbed their retaliation operation True Promise. Sounds like some sort of Quentin Tarantino movie. The exact numbers of missiles and drones of what types are unknown. There are reports that as many as 100 drones may have been in flight. Iran has launched a direct attack from Iranian soil towards the state of Israel. We're closely monitoring the Iranian killer drones that are en route sent by Iran. This is a severe and dangerous escalation, so says IDF spokesperson the feared deadly Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari in a statement. Our defensive and offensive capabilities are at highest levels of readiness ahead of this large-scale attack from Iran. Together with our partners, the Israeli Defense Force is operating at full force to defend the state of Israel and the people of Israel. James, I was just reminded on my morning show Monday, I began with the article that said, oil is spiking since Iran's going to surprise attack over the weekend. It reminded me of the newspaper that says Japan made strike Pearl Harbor November 30th, 1941. Act 2, the results. Israel says Iran launched more than 300 drones and missiles, 99% of which were intercepted. From the Associated Press, booms and air raid sirens sounded across Israel after Iran launched hundreds of drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles in an unprecedented revenge mission that pushed the Middle East closer to a region-wide war. A military spokesman said the launches numbered more than 300, but 99% of them intercepted, calling the outcome a very significant strategic success. Of those missiles and bombs, several ballistic missiles reached Israeli territory, causing minor damage to an airbase. Rescuers meanwhile said a 7-year-old girl in a Bedouin Arab town seriously wounded in southern Israel, apparently in a missile strike that they said the police were investigating the circumstances. In Washington, Biden said U.S. forces helped Israel down nearly all the drones and missiles and pledged to convene allies to develop a unified response. Act 3, the response. Israel tells U.S. it has no choice but to respond to Iran. Axios reported that Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin that Israel has, I guess Lloyd Austin, he's all healthy and back at work now. Israel has no choice but to respond to Iran's missile and drone attack, which came in retaliation for Israel's bombing of Iran's consulate in Damascus. And James, perhaps the most telling bit of icing on the gravy here. Ukrainian officials jealous of U.S. defense of Israel during Iran attack. Poor little Zelensky, he just can't catch a break. Ukrainian officials have expressed envy. Well, which is it, envy or jealousy? That the U.S. responses to an Iranian drone and missile attack on Israel that came in retaliation for the Israeli bombing of Israel's consulate in Syria. So, James, what were they due for a Passover encore coming up here in a couple days?
Good question. Hopefully nothing, and I think that's ultimately my takeaway from all of this. But let's get into some of the responses that you can garner about this, put them all out on the table and sort through them. For example, you could turn to the MSM. The Spectator had up an op-ed about what Iran's attack on Israel means for the Jewish state, America, and the region, in which they opined that Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel Saturday night represents a dangerous escalation for three reasons. The first is its scale, some 300 drones and missiles. Second, it marks the first time the Islamic regime has launched a lethal attack on Israeli territory from Iran itself, rather than through proxies. Most important of all is the combination of the first two, a major attack launched against Israel from Iranian territory. All right, so there's the sort of the mainstream takeaway of all of this. Those Iranians, those dastardly Iranians, have definitely upped the ante here. But we're not going to take our cues from the MSM, are we? So let's turn to some independent media and get some reactions. Well, you could turn to the Ron Paul Institute, published Scott Ritter's reaction, The Missiles of April. And Scott Ritter, who has never seen an BRICS Plus / Shanghai Cooperation Organization military operation propaganda that he hasn't amplified, has cheer-led this. Yay! This shows how wonderful and amazing and strong those amazing Iranians are, and how wonderful and successful all of this was. Because, yeah, they intercepted 99% of the missiles, but the ones they got through hit an airbase, and that shows that Iran is superior technologically, or blah, blah, blah. I don't take Scott Ritter that seriously, and I'll put it on record. Edwards Slav Squat had an excellent article up back in February, I Don't Agree with Scott Ritter, where he lays out it point by point, the things that Scott Ritter has said about the Ukraine conflict over the years, and how he directly contradicts himself later and hopes you don't notice, etc. So take it for what it's worth. Along the same lines, you could turn to Moon of Alabama. Also, yay, yay, BRICS, saviors, blah, blah, blah. The resistance axis penetrated the Zionist security screen is the headline on Moon of Alabama. And he goes on to cite Scott Ritter. So take that for what it's worth. A more level-headed response that I think gets closer to the heart. Robert Inlakesh at Last American Vagabond. Iran's response against Israel was calculated, but not if you listen to Western media, making the point that, oh my God, this was just a willy-nilly attack. No, they very clearly telegraphed this in advance. They said they were going to do it, and then they did it. Which, as you pointed out, is what some people are picking up on. For example, Activist Post had an op-ed up on this. Was Iran's strike against Israel a psyop? Pointing out, yeah, they telegraphed it very far in advance. Hey, guys, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And then they did it. So it was all a big smokescreen. Well, in a sense, yes, but I think that is actually the point. And if there is any strategy to what happened here, it is precisely that this was not some surprise sneak attack that could have been mistaken for some big invasion or something. No, they very clearly said, we are going to do this thing. They said it ahead of time. Guys, you get ready, you prepare for it. And then they did exactly what they said they were going to do, which is presumably a way of giving everyone a chance to save face. Iran gets to save face by saying, hey, look, we responded to the illegal bombing of our embassy, and we did it in the, we told them ahead of time. And Israel can say, okay, we did the thing, and then they did their thing, and they could walk away. And everyone can say, okay, we did our thing, and not escalate this into World War III. Which would be the nicest thing. As always, we have to put the big disclaimer on this. We tape this 24 hours before you see it, so whatever happened in the past 24 hours, if World War III has happened in the past 24 hours, we don't know about it, but we're just going with what we have. But assuming that this does not turn into a further escalation, because that will change everything, but assuming it doesn't, there are still some takeaways we can get from this, one of which we could get from Yahoo, AFP via Yahoo, digital sleuths fuel misinformation after Iran strikes, where they're, oh my God, these OS Int people on social media are spreading all these fake pictures and analysis of what happened with regards to this strike, and therefore, ... censorship, of course. And another interesting report, Iran attack delays Israel's invasion of Rafah. So basically, while they're deliberating what to do with regards to this strike, well, they can't concentrate as hard on Gaza. So maybe that's a win of sorts. I don't know. At any rate, that's what's out on the table. And I think the best reading of this would be that Iran is trying to give everyone a way to save face and stop the escalation any further. But we'll have to see what ultimately results from this. And the U.S., in that article you were citing from Antiwar, the U.S. says that they won't help Israel. They won't participate in an attack on Iran. But take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, generally, yeah. Look at what they do, not what they say. James, couldn't this telegraphing also put Iran in a sort of sweet position of like, we warned you, we actually want to help civilians not get bombed in these war zone issues. James back here. Something else I covered on the morning show. One thing that, of course, that always unites the Democrats and the Pepsis and the Cokes and the Republicans here. Marsha Blackburn was one of them, a Republican, and I forget the Democrat lady. They all stand firm in our support for Israel and are very excited to, of course, you know, use a lot of weapons that help fund their campaigns. Biggest funder, AIPAC. Biggest funder, AIPAC. The one thing Cokes and Pepsis can unite on is their slavish love for occupied Palestine. Yes, Passover Earth Day is coming up here on Monday, April 22nd, and that's if we make it through whatever giant, probably shooter event we have to have here in the States around 420. But more on 420 in a little bit. Our second story on this New World Next Week episode 551 takes us to Japan, where tens of thousands protest the World Health Organization's supernatural grab over global health. Grabbing this from childrenshealthdefense.org. Not a lot of coverage on this. Tens of thousands of people rallied over the weekend in a central Tokyo park to protest the WHO's proposed pandemic treaty and amendments to the international health regulations, proposals that critics allege threaten Japan's and other countries' national sovereignty. The rally called even for Japan's withdrawal from the World Health Organization. Participants also opposed the pandemic treaty, the IHR amendments, and the Japanese government's public health policies. Sort of like, you know, what are you protesting? What do you got? The rally was organized at the East Ikebukuro Central Park, where Izumi Kamijio, a member of WCH Japan, told the Defender newspaper the site was symbolic as it once housed the Sugamo Prison, which had me running over to Wikipedia to look that up, where most of the top government and military people after World War II were detained who refused to collaborate with the occupying force, i.e. General MacArthur and the U.S. military. Estimates of the turnout as high as 100,000 people, but even a turnout of 20,000 people would be very significant. I will include that link to Sugamo Prison and another one amidst growing resistance. Who turns up the heat on members to sign this pandemic treaty as the deadline approaches? I believe it's coming up May 20-something, James. We're just about a month away. As the deadline approaches for the 194 member nations of the World Health Organization to sign agreements granting broad new powers to the UN subsidiary, its advocates are turning up the heat on the member countries to get on board despite growing resistance. So the resistance builds more push. On March 20th, WHO ambassador and good little New World Order minion, there Harry is again, James, you former UK Prime Minister, Gordon New World Order Brown, hailed a campaign led by 100-plus pantheon of global leaders urging members to sign. We will include the latest revised draft as a PDF link. I think it's about 20-some pages. And then this. Biden admin announces new partnership with 50 countries to stifle future pandemics. President Joe Biden's administration will help 50 countries identify and respond to infectious diseases with the goal of preventing pandemics like the COVID-19 outbreak that suddenly halted normal life around the globe in 2020. It was the COVID that did it. U.S. government officials will also offer support in the countries, most of them located in Africa and Asia, to develop better testing, surveillance, communication, and preparedness for such outbreaks in these countries. The strategy will help, quote, prevent, detect, and effectively respond to biological threats wherever they emerge from our biolabs, Biden said in a statement. The Global Health Security Strategy, President said, aims to protect people worldwide, and we will make the United States stronger, safer, and healthier than ever before at this critical moment, blah, blah, blah. So, James, what is this? It's like we're intentionally deflecting attention from this WHO thing, so we made our own American thing, or they just put out a bunch of trial balloons, and hey, whichever New World Order treaty you guys go along with, that's the one we'll pin to the wall?
Essentially, yes, because exactly as you're saying, I think this will sell differently to different publics in different places of the world. So in the U.S., where obviously there is more of a sort of, hey, guys, we're leading the way. We're not beholden to some international organization. It has to be sold in such a way as, don't worry, guys, this isn't a UN WHO thing. This is an American thing. The American Pandemic Treaty, yay! So, as a way to get people to essentially do the exact same thing. Now, as has been pointed out before, and rightly so, it's not like the WHO needed this pandemic agreement in order to help coordinate the scandemic lockdowns. I mean, that already took place. So, ultimately, what they're just trying to do is really put some teeth into this organization and make sure that there's no dissenters, but they don't necessarily need this, and it can be done from a lot of different perspectives. There are a couple of different things that you can take from this, one of which is to snatch defeat from the jaws of this victory of people starting to rise up all around the world, including even in Japan, against the World Health Organization and its machinations to say, well, see, if we do derail it in Geneva in May, they're just going to do it a different way by some other, you know, agreement or what have you. Well, yes, that's true, but I think the exact opposite is actually what we should take out of this. The growing international movement of people rising up against this shows that we are having an incredible effect of breaking through the complete and total shutdown of this information from mainstream sources. You are not hearing about the WHO pandemic agreement from any of the mainstream sources. They are trying to ignore it and get you looking elsewhere, precisely because they know that any attention to this matter will manifest in people rising up against it, because people do not want it. But the fact that people are rising up shows that we are breaking through that. People are not listening to the establishment media anymore. They are setting their own agenda. I actually think that that's an incredibly good thing. And instead of just, laying down and, they win, they're going to win anyway, so don't try anything. No, we need to try even harder and to stop whatever they're cooking up as a potential alternative to whatever does or doesn't get rubber stamped next month in Geneva. So I do have more to say about this, about the Japanese protests in particular and about this entire movement in general. Part of which I said in a Good Morning CHD that I just recorded with Meryl Nass that will be released, I believe, this Saturday. So stay tuned for that. Also this weekend in the subscriber newsletter, I'm going to be writing more about this subject.
Someone in my chat very smartly put it this morning, it's kind of like NATO. If you're at war, we're all at war. If you're sick, we're all in lockdown. It is this sort of worldwide NATO-type agreement of the responsibility to ruin and traumatize an entire generation. Whew. James, we also just had, speaking of Japan, we just had Japanese Prime Minister Kishida here in America telling us not to worry about being the policeman of the world and just embrace our role in selectively enforcing our ideals and will upon the world. Any thoughts on Kishida in America?
Well, yeah, actually, the only thought that I had about that is that my son was watching the news the other day, and they showed a clip of Kishida in Washington giving some speech or saying something. And both me and my son, we looked at each other and goes, actually, he can actually speak English. Because most Japanese speak English like this. But actually, no, he had pretty good pronunciation. That was news to me. But yeah, I don't really care. But I guess we should put it on record just as follow-up to what we were talking about last week, that yes, they did hold that meeting that we were talking about last week. Japan, the Philippines, and the U.S., their joint meeting about the Indo-Pacific, and they released their joint vision statement. So I'll put in on the record and people can look at it in the show notes. But basically, blah, 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 firm commitment to a free and open Indo-Pacific, blah, 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 concerned about China and its imposition of military force, and blah, 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 climate change and all the other usual nonsense. So there you go.
James, it's been kind of funny in the fallout since Japanese turned American LA Dodgers baseball star Shohei Ohtani and his controversy of his interpreter stealing and gambling millions of his dollars. It seems like they've been more open to showing Shohei Ohtani without his interpreter speaking perfect English the other day. He certainly speaks better English than I do Japanese. Our third and final story on this New World Next Week, episode 551, It Pleases the Crown. Germany becomes the biggest EU country yet to legalize recreational cannabis use. Smoking cannabis, or eating it, or cooking it, or doing whatever you want with it, is now legal for adults over age 18 in Germany. That's funny. Usually it's 21 here in the States for most places that have legalized it. After a new law greenlighting personal possession came into effect on April 1st, legislation which made Germany the biggest EU country to legalize recreational cannabis was adopted after a heated debate about the pros and cons of providing easier access. The new law allows adults in Germany to possess up to 25 grams of dried cannabis in public spaces, and the Crown will allow you to cultivate 3 marijuana plants at home. Public consumption of marijuana will be prohibited near schools, sports facilities, and children's playgrounds between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m., which is pretty lenient. Minors caught in possession of cannabis will have to go through a drug abuse prevention program where you can really get introduced to the hardcore gateway drugs. The German coalition government, led by Chancellor Olaf Scholz, argued that legalization will help contain the growing black market for the popular substance, a.k.a. knocking out the competition. A number of medical associations have warned that the move to decriminalize weed will lead to the highest risks among young people, who are all, what, on psych meds? From our point of view, the law, as it is written, is a disaster. Katja Seidel, a therapist at the Tannenhof Berlin-Brandenburg Drug Addiction Center in the nation's capital, told the aforementioned AFP, because she doesn't want you to know, that cannabis can help mitigate or even replace the need for hardcore Rockefeller medicine, psych meds, surgeries, any other expensive treatments we could offer you. James, have you ever smoked weed? Have I asked you this? Did I forget?
Probably. Yes. Yes, I have. Okay. Have you? Sorry.
I probably asked you that actually when we were in Japan. Probably. Because, of course, probably. I'm an American pothead in Japan, realizing, oh man, there is nothing. There is no way any of this is going to happen. I think I'll have another beer from the street vending machine.
Yeah. University students smoking pot in Japan is literally front page national news story. So, yeah, they take it very seriously over here. But my hot take on this story, I guess we could point out that wonderful, you're allowed to possess so many grams, you're allowed to grow 3 plants and no more, is to a certain extent, their power to delimit how many plants you can grow is still the same ridiculous authoritarian structure that exists as when they say you can grow 0 plants. Oh, you can grow 3. Okay, wonderful. Again, it's nonsense, it's stupid, it's authoritarian, but at least it's a move in the right direction. And to be honest, I'm kind of sick of the people who whine and complain about everything that happens and always point out the bad side of it. Yes, it's not wonderful, it's not perfect, but hey, it's slightly better, so... You know, have a blast, my German friends, in the slightly greater medical autonomy that you now enjoy than you did before. It's not enough, but it is at least in the right direction. And human freedom for the win.
Exactly. If their people aren't in a cage with their lives and families ruined, that is a positive. That is a win. Even if the New World Order wants you lazy stoner. I'll tell you what, I'm not a lazy stoner. I've been a smoker, I've been a pothead for a long time, but I am one of the most active, energetic, go-getter potheads you will ever run across. James, I've said it a million times on my show. But it just constantly proves itself out to me, this little analogy that I make that works in all these different areas. They, trademark, will prohibit something as long as they can make money. They're run-for-profit prisons, maybe bringing the drugs in themselves, and then, you know, arresting you for daring to do them. They'll do that as long as they can until they flip the switch and get to lord over the exploitation. And I was talking about, I went over a few different cannabis stories this morning on my Morning Monarchy. Some other states and places, like, you're just going to get on it. You're going to get on a state database. Those rec stores will not take cash. It's like, those don't sound like things that truthers would want to go support. If your place has probably passed these kind of laws, it's probably legal for you to still buy from your local grower, as even my mom came up with. You mean black markets matter? Absolutely. James, that is New World Next Week, episode 550. Well, the other element, I wrote my note here as we were thinking and talking. Baseball reference. They always talk about, because this past week we had Jackie Robinson Day. Oh, Jackie broke the color line. Jackie broke the color line. Oh, you mean he just showed up and refused not to leave and you guys just let him in? No, the bigot gangsters that created and still run this thing decided we're not going to be able to prohibit this anymore. So let's flip the switch and we'll pat ourselves on the back about how progressive we are. We let black guys in to play baseball once you forced us into the position. I would ask people to kind of look at that and use that formula, if you will, for other areas in your life. Because I might not know what career paths and what your life is like, but I bet you've seen something in your life where it's like, they kept the controls until they just blast the spigot, and they still are in control of the spigot. I believe we are in stock of the latest amount of Corbett Report USB bundles at newworldnextweek.com. Also, of course, hoodies and hats, and a lot of our work, both myself and James Corbett, that helped support our fear-free, ad-free work. Again, we've been doing this, what, combined 30-some years? Never heard an advertisement. We give the work to you for free. If it resonates, we would appreciate your support. James, there it is.
That's it. Awesome. Let's do it again.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Take care.
Take care.